Flow. This is Sean Doyle, your host of the podcast Aligned. Today, we're going to be discussing value. Aligned is focused on the needs and interests of executives who are growing middle market and rapidly emerging companies. Today's subject should be of great interest to those leaders. While we're going to be discussing value, the practical application of what we're going to do is going to result in revenue, increased margin, better pricing, more effective sales. Fitzmartin is a sales-first company, and we are driven by that and want to pursue that, and we know you are too. So let's dive in. Let's begin by looking at what is the definition of value. Seems like a really simple word, but it's kind of interesting. It's got some nuance to it. Value, formulaically, would be simply benefits divided by cost. When a customer is looking at your offering, the benefits and the cost of that offering compared to others. Basic underlying concept of value is meeting needs, right? So sometimes those needs are wants, sometimes those needs are demands, but regardless, no matter what the wants and the resources customers have, they're looking for value as they seek to solve those needs and wants. Let's begin with defining the word value. So in marketing terms, well, we could also call it customer perceived value, and that's an important nuance that'll come back to play. It's simply the evaluation of benefits divided by costs, values derived from that. The underlying concept in value from a marketer's point of view is simply looking at what a consumer needs, what they want, and even what they demand. So with financial ability, resources, a customer is able to resolve these needs, wants, and demands. We break down value into four segments: functional value, monetary value, social value, and psychological value. So you can see value becomes a pretty complex subject pretty quickly. A total market offering was simply has both quantitative and qualitative measures. So before we go too much further, let's discuss some of the more interesting ideas around value. The paradox of value, I think, is pretty curious, also known as a diamond water paradox. You may have read or heard of Adam Smith's An Inquiry into the Nature and Causes of the Wealth of Nature. Well, Adam Smith offers a pretty interesting insight. So let me read a section from that book. What are the rules which men naturally observe in exchanging them, goods, for money or for one another? I shall now proceed to examine. These rules determine what may be called relative or exchangeable value of goods. The word value is to be observed has two meanings, sometimes expressed in the utility of some particular object, sometimes the power of purchasing other goods, which the possession of that object conveys. The one may be called the value in use, the other value in exchange. He moves on then to talk about this water diamond paradox. Let me read that. Of these things, the things that have the greatest value in use frequently have little or no value in exchange. On the contrary, those which have the greatest value in exchange frequently have little or no value in use. Nothing is more useful than water, but it's can be purchased for scarcely anything. Adam Smith obviously wrote this before you could buy $5 bottles of water. To continue, a diamond, on the contrary, has scarcely any use value, but a great, very great quantity of other goods may frequently be had in exchange for it. So this thinking led to an exchange of value being determined by labor. And if we get into the labor value of money versus the value pricing models that we think about things today, it's an interesting deep dive into economics. It's an interesting deep dive into the way value is derived, and it's definitely changed from a labor theory of value to most of us work today. So if you're intrigued by these ideas, I definitely would encourage you to read more of Adam Smith and The Paradox of Value. I think it's also important to look at the labor theory of value. It's driven much of at least American culture and the subjective theory of value. Much of what we're going to talk about touches on all of these, but let's move to a more practical application of these ideas. I want you to see first the idea of a value triad. Value triad simply states this. There are three ways that we can offer value to a customer. There's revenue gain. In other words, we can offer to somebody, if we sell you our product or our service, that you will gain revenue. That's value to the customer. Another very tangible and objective value, it would be cost reduction. So if you buy our products and services, you are going to be able to reduce your cost. In other words, the value to the customer with cost reduction is keeping more money in your pocket. But then there's this less tangible, subjective idea of emotional contribution. So let's spend a little bit of time diving into emotional contribution. Most of us, especially in the B2B world, get revenue gain and cost reduction. So of those three levers, the opportunity exists for us to grow in the application of understanding the emotional contribution and how to deliver that value and express that value to our customers. And this is true whether it's a commodity that you're selling or a high-value service. So you might say, but I sell a commodity. Or you might say, I'm selling services. I'm a lawyer. This doesn't apply to me. Well, that's not true. A customer still has to seek value, whether it's rationally and emotionally, whether it's revenue gain, cost reduction, or emotional contribution. All buyers are buying this way. So let's break this down. So let's break down this thing called emotional contribution. What does that look like? Well, a customer might perceive emotional contribution as past experiences, understanding of your brand in the context of the larger market. It could be a perception of that brand. It could be their understanding of how your product or service could be used in their own marketing, in their own sales offering. Emotional contribution could be social power, simply the power of, I used Caterpillar equipment. That's a powerful brand. That says something about you. It's similar in consumer marketing as to driving a high-value car and what that has to say about you. It could have to do with service. It could have to do with service offering. It could have to do with the way you deliver your product. It could have to do with the way your product's packaged. It could have to do with the way the installation of your product would work. It could have to do with the way your services are delivered. It could have to do with the service intake model. It could have to do with the quality of your services and products over that of your competitors. There's lots of emotional contribution considerations for us to make in business, but we typically, at least as a first resort, market and then later sell on revenue gain and cost reduction. So the greatest lever you probably have to offer is developing your understanding of emotional contribution. In fact, let's look at this in terms of what happens in sales frequently and how emotional contribution can bring money to the bottom line. So let me tell this story in the context of a purchasing manager. And I get it. Sometimes you're selling, let's say, legal services or architectural services, and there's not a procurement system. But regardless, there's still this opportunity to understand the concept here. So somebody in a purchasing decision, they're wanting to demonstrate to senior leadership how they are making a contribution to the business. And that's not something to be underestimated. People in these roles, especially with non-strategic purchases, have difficult, thankless jobs. In fact, I'd offer that one of the challenges is often we see ourselves as being strategic and important, but the way the buyers see us is not that same thing. We can be seen as a small part of a big machine from the customer, from the buyer's point of view. And that's important to understand. So while we come in talking strategy, often the buyer is not thinking about us as a strategic purchase and we're being managed. And that can lead to a lot of frustration, be it marketing or sales. It also leads to frustration when we try to work in a cost basis. So back to the story here, these folks that are under pressure to complete transactions quickly and efficiently, when anything goes wrong, when they buy something and it goes poorly, they get blamed. Lacking often is their understanding of the hard work they have to understand their own businesses and do deep diligence, and that doesn't get recognized. So emotional contribution, simply, if we can help this purchaser get out of this rut, giving them visible wins and to get a larger share of the attention of their bosses to move up in esteem, to move up in value at their companies. Well, that's an incredible emotional contribution. The way we do it is we have a process called value mapping. So when we're looking at buyers, we're understanding in the cognitive marketing model that there are three aspects to this buyer. Yes, there's a financial pain that they're dealing with. And that's certainly revenue gain, cost reduction helps with that. And that's part of that decision. You've still got to contribute there. But there's a strategic pain and there's a personal pain. So I just demonstrated what a personal pain would be. A strategic pain would be selling in the emotional contribution space, but it has nothing to do with the dollars of the widgets or the dollar of an hour, what your costs are. It has to do with how you're going to add value to the entity in a larger strategic way. So if you're selling your products and services on an inputs basis, that labor theory of value, that means if it takes 8 hours to get something done, I'm going to sell those 8 hours. If it costs $100 of materials and goods, then I'm going to sell those $100 at a slight margin. Well, if you can shift that thinking, and there's significant gain to be made by shifting that thinking in emotional contribution, you could even argue 20 to 30% off the cuff. If you can sell strategic pains, if you can understand what that buyer is trying to do as a company, not necessarily just why they're buying from you, but looking at that larger piece, that larger machine, and seeing how you fit in it, there may be ways you can add value to the company's work strategically, and then that allows you to sell not on inputs, but on value. So strategic understanding, personal understanding of our buyers allows us to leverage this idea of emotional contribution. Okay, so let's think about this. We're late stage, you're in a deal, and a customer says, well, I need a little more. Well, you've already, at that point, been vetted, right? Your product, your service, your offering is in good place. They want to buy from you, but now they're looking for more. Well, the place to go to is not, well, we can reduce your cost more, or we can promise you more revenue. I mean, actually, to have integrity, you shouldn't change those at all. You've given a price. If you change a price at that point, then really what you're saying is, I had extra margin in there, but you caught me. So don't change that. This is where emotional contribution at that late stage deal closing, we'd call this a 4-5 conversion or the fourth conversion in the cognitive marketing model. The opportunity here is to come in and solve and offer strategic and personal pains, to come back and give emotional contribution in the areas of quality or services, social recognition, marketing leverage for them, not you, and even leveraging past experiences. Past experiences simply as a way to show a reduction of risk. So emotional contribution together with cost reduction and revenue gain is an incredibly powerful way to sell. So we want to encourage you to consider all these. Remember the value triad, revenue gain, cost reduction, and emotional contribution. And then remember the cognitive marketing map of pain, financial pains, revenue and cost, and then emotional contributions that spin out into strategic pains and personal pains. If you can think through these, it'll be an incredibly powerful way for you to add revenue, add net income to the bottom line with the exact same set of salespeople, marketing teams, same products, same services. It's definitely worth considering. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope this conversation of value has been enlightening, and I hope it's been practical. So we love sales, and this is an important part of it.